We were at the beach, sitting in a car. My uncle put a tape in the car stereo and told us to listen. A song burst from the tape with an explosive energy. It was an insanely complicated bass and guitar riff in perfect sync with the driest trumpet I've ever heard. The song then settled into this dynamic groove that was led by the guitar and followed by the drums. And then this shrill voice started singing. The song was Anthem, the album Fly By Night, and the band was Rush. This is Girls Talk About Music, and this is episode 3, Rush. Last Friday, January 10th, the world learned some terrible news. Neil Peart, Rush's drummer and lyricist, had died 3 days earlier of brain cancer. My deep belief at this news soon turned to profound and real grief. I immediately wrote a group text to my husband and my brother. They are two huge Rush fans, and they are also drummers. We were stunned. The thing is, nobody knew Neil Peart was sick. He had retired in 2015, right after the end of the R40 tour. And we fans were happy knowing he was enjoying his retirement in California with his family. And now, only a few years into his retirement, one of the most important figures in Canadian and rock music was gone. And he had left this world as discreetly as he had lived. His monumental work as a lyricist and drummer speaking for itself. In the days since we learned of his death, the outpouring of love and tributes to Neil Peart has been incredible. In this episode, I share some of my memories of Rush as a lifelong fan. And later, I talk to a Rush fan who's taking her love of Rush music to a whole new level. This is my very small tribute to Neil Peart, a man I never met, but who will always be to me and many millions of fans around the world, our beloved professor. That day at the beach, I was 13 and had just been introduced to what would become one of my favorite bands of all times. I didn't know that then. What I knew was that the music I was hearing was completely different to everything I had listened to before. It was 1989 in Venezuela, and rock and all these subgenres were entering a second major wave of popularity in the country. A typical listening party will include classic rock, like Pink Floyd and Led Zeppelin, heavy metal, like Black Sabbath and Iron Maiden, and all the progressive bands, like Yes, Marillion, Genesis, and of course Rush. I listened to all, but none will become more important to my musical education than Rush. It was also the era when we were transitioning from vinyls to CDs, and it wasn't easy to find these bands' albums in the country. My sisters and I were very lucky when our parents took us on a trip to Florida, where we then proceeded to stock up on the music we couldn't find. Among those CDs that we purchased, Caress of Steel and A Farewell to Kings, Rush's third and fifth albums, respectively. We were mesmerized by the music. And there was also a sense of mystery. We had seen no videos of Rush, and the only photos we had were those ones in the CD booklets. Three skinny guys in robes looking at us from a faraway land. Later, we learned it was actually Canada. I will say that musically, Rush introduced me to the concept of musical ambition. In the context of rock, I had never heard a bass composition like those of Geddy Lee. He was the bass player and the singer who, in the 80s, during the synth craze, also took on the keyboards. I also had never heard drums sound like Neil Peart's either. It was all so precise, but so impossibly exciting at the same time. You never knew what to expect. It was indeed Neil Peart who taught me how drums could sound, how drums could contribute to a song, their lyricism and eloquence. The truth is that Neil Peart taught me the possibilities of the instrument, as did Geddy Lee and Alex Lifeson, the band's genius guitarist. Later, when I moved to Canada, Rush's philosophy started to get clearer. That's when I started to understand the lyrics and their evolution as they went from grandiose science fiction tales in 2112 to smaller but still deeply emotionally effective narratives in songs like Red Sector A and Red Barchetta. And even more important is that I started to understand the qualities that differentiated Rush from any other bands I liked. It was an integrity that was reflected not only in the music, but in their own very particular way of inhabiting the role of rock musicians. Nothing ever came before the music for Rush. No backstage lifestyle, no image, and certainly no popular musical trends or norms. Throughout, they were rebels, but again, in their own unique way. Their rebelliousness was in their intelligence, in the way they brought a huge amount of intellectuality to their music, but still made it 100% rocking. Their rebelliousness was also, and this is the key for me, in their kindness, humility, and most of all, respect for themselves, their instruments, their music, and their fans. Rush taught me about the power of art, the value of music, and the freedom we need to create. Although Neil Peart is gone, I know Rush's and Neil's legacy will live for many years to come, as young music fans and musicians discover their extraordinary music and learn the lesson that you can live your life, create, and be successful, and do it all in your own terms. Coming up next, an interview with a very special Rush fan. Ever since she was a little girl, Toni During has loved music. Now a graduate from the jazz program at Capilano University in North Vancouver, BC, Toni is exploring her musical talent and knowledge in a slightly unusual way. With her current band, formed with musicians from her jazz program, she's performing material from a vast musical repertoire, but not the one you might imagine. That's because she's the singer and keyboard player in the Modern Day Warriors, a Rush tribute band from Vancouver, BC. I had the opportunity to talk to Toni recently to ask her about her path from jazz to Rush, talk about Neil Peart's passing, and the value of rock tribute bands. It was a great conversation. I hope you enjoy it. Thank you very much for taking the time to talk to me today. It's an absolute thrill to talk to you. This will be a conversation between two girls who love Rush.
Yes. Girls love Rush too.
That's right. Thank you. Thank you again.
Well, it's an absolute pleasure to be on a podcast supporting women musicians. So thank you for doing this. This is so cool.
Yeah, thank you. It's amazing. And I hope I get lots of, you know, lots of more girls talking about music. But yeah. So, Tawny, we are doing this interview just over a week since we learned of the passing of Neil Peart. Mm-hmm. It's been a difficult time for Rush fans the past few days. Can you tell me how you learned about the news about Neil's passing?
Well, I've been telling people it's actually interesting. This is not the interesting part. I changed my phone and a bunch of notification settings were reset on my phone. And I was getting notification updates from CBC News, which normally I would turn off. But I was leaving them on because the news this decade so far has been quite, you know, it's important to keep up on it. And so I was in a Best Buy talking with a salesman and I get a notification on my phone and look, and it was, you know, and my jaw dropped and I mean, I don't know what to say. It was shocking because nobody even knew he was sick. Right. And he's always kept a low profile. That's Neil's way. And so the fact that we hadn't heard from him wasn't a shocking. It was what we as Rush fans probably expected. And so to hear this, it's just devastating. It's been a really, really hard week. And I've been spending all week re-listening to albums, re-watching documentaries, you know, just rediscovering my passion but in an invigorated way, diving back into their music and their legacy and how important they were to music, you know, and Neil's contribution to drumming and music. So
that's right. That's right. Yeah. It's been a tough week, as you say. And, I was very afraid of, listening to, the music that day. When I learned the news, I was very afraid. I thought I would not be able to do it for several days. However, I was asked to talk to Radio Canada on Sunday.
Wow. Yeah.
So I kind of had to listen a little bit, organize my thoughts. And it was very tough. It was difficult to listen just, you know, within minutes of learning the news. Somebody called me and asked me to do that. And I had to force myself to listen, and it was very difficult, but yeah. You know, but again, we're starting in a sad note, but let's go back. And thank you so much for sharing your experience. I want to go back to the beginning with you. Where do you grow up and when did you discover your love of music?
Oh, well, I grew up in North Vancouver. So just over the bridge. I mean, I've been making noise since, mostly musical, since I can remember. And singing and music have just been in my, you know, in my heart and soul, not to be too corny about it, but it's just been a part of my way of life for as long as I can remember. I didn't grow up in a super musical household, but I kind of forced my family to to follow the beat of my drum, so to speak. And so as long as I can remember.
That's amazing. I mean, so you didn't have a super musical family, like you said, but you knew you loved music since you were very little.
Yes.
I understand you are a jazz student, or were a jazz student. Can you tell me a little bit about that?
Yeah, so I was fortunate enough to have a really excellent choral program at the high school I went to, including jazz choirs, which kind of was a gateway into me pursuing a education in jazz singing at Capilano University, also in North Vancouver. And so I went into jazz school partly for a passion for jazz music, but also just for a passion to want to know as much about music as I possibly could. I wanted to understand the theory. I wanted to understand rhythm. I wanted to understand the history. I just wanted to know and explore music in every possible way. And I was really fortunate at that program. It's an excellent music education program because we studied extensively jazz repertoire, jazz chord changes, jazz history, played jazz music, but we also got to explore African rhythm music. I did an Indian fusion concert. We did so much music. We played, you know, jazz, rock, fusion music. So I was fortunate enough to be able to explore all kinds of repertoire there. And in a way, jazz school, the more you learn about music and theory, it forces you to look at the music that you loved before and kind of put it to a test and say, does this pass my new roster of appreciation for music? And so some things fell by the wayside. Some things I was like, oh, I don't know why I was interested in that. It seems so kind of simple or, you know, not for me anymore. But then things like Rush, the more I listened to it with this knowledge, with this perspective, I was like, I can't believe they're doing this. And I can't believe. And so, you know.
Yeah. That is very interesting. And that takes me to my next question. So you, being a jazz student, and I'm not sure, did you complete your program already or are you still?
Yes. Yeah. I've been out for about 2 years now.
Yeah. 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 So being a jazz student, and like you mentioned, people might assume that all your background will be listening and singing jazz or playing jazz. How did you discover Rush? And do you think there is a relationship between your love of jazz and your knowledge of jazz and being pulled into Rush's music?
Well, to answer your second question shortly, yes. Definitely. I grew up listening to all kinds of rock music. I mean, when I was a kid, things like kind of pop punk bands were really popular. So I was listening to, you know, Avril Lavigne and those kinds of things. But I also listened to a lot of classic rock once I got to high school. I had lots of friends who were into classic rock. We listened to Rock 101 in Vancouver all the time. So we were listening to Eagles and Pink Floyd and the Beatles and all kinds of things. And Rush was a part of that. So it was at the time, it was just a part of that soundscape of that kind of, I loved music from the 60s, 70s and 80s. I just loved the musicianship, the production, the aesthetic of it. Rush was always kind of part of the backdrop of my experience. And then going to jazz school and having a deeper understanding of what's going on in a song forced me to, you know, look back at this music I was listening to and go, hey, what Rush is doing is pretty remarkable, pretty spectacular rhythmically, in terms of song form and song structure. All the members of the Modern Day Warriors, the Rush band I'm in, we all met at jazz school at Kaplan University. So we're all jazz musicians in a way too. And people always come up to us and say, I'm trying to be modest here, but people always say, it's crazy that you're in a Rush band. Like, you know, how do you pull off that music? And I really think we would really struggle to do it if we didn't have that jazz education at our backs.
So you mentioned the Modern Day Warriors. And for people who are listening, this is a Rush tribute band that you are the singer and keyboard player in, and you're based in Vancouver. So when did you form or when did you join the Modern Day Warriors?
I was just thinking about this recently. I think in April of 2016, I got a Facebook message from the drummer of my band saying, hey, he had messaged me before about doing other kinds of projects, doing like an 80s music tribute. And he's the kind of guy who, it didn't matter if he said, hey, do you want to join my circus band and wear clown makeup? And like, if he asked you to do a project, he wanted to be a part of it because he was such an influential musician, such a hardworking musician. And you know that something, being a part of a group of his, was bound to be successful and interesting. So when he messaged me saying, hey, do you want to be in a Rush tribute band? And I was like, sure, why not? What how hard could it be? Keeping in mind, I think at that time, like I knew quite a bit of Russia's repertoire, but I probably was less well versed in, let's say, early Russ repertoire, where Getty is shrieking up to a F sharp 5, if you and so it was one of those kind of once we started rehearsing, I was like, what have I gotten myself into? But the group of musicians that he brought together was so great, and we were all really dedicated, and we rehearsed regularly all that summer. And I wanted to, I did everything in my power to make it work, because we had such a good time playing this music. We had such a good time hanging out before and after that, I was like, okay, I'm in this, and we're going to make it work.
I've had to add here that I've seen you. I've seen your show.
Thank you.
And it was, first of all, just a thrill to be able to go out in Vancouver and hear Rush music live. That is just on itself, it's just wonderful. And then to see a band of young musicians, much younger than myself, playing Rush, that's just, it just adds so much more excitement to it. So in Modern Day Warriors, you fulfill 2/3 of Geddy Lee's role in the band, because Geddy Lee is just like this magician who plays the bass, plays the keyboards, and sings the most amazing melodies. You sing and play the keyboard. What would you say defines Geddy Lee as a singer, and how do you get yourself into the space?
What defines him as a singer? I mean, he has, aside from things like, he has an incredibly distinct vocal tone. Like when you hear Geddy Lee sing, within the first note, it's him, his vocal quality. And I know that some people, non-Rush fans maybe have problems with his voice, but you can't deny his vocal chops. Like when you listen, I was listening to Tears recently and listening to just the flow of that melody and how he follows it along. He's an incredibly gifted singer, and it's almost in some ways weirdly overlooked because everyone focuses on his bass playing and they're excited by what he sings, but when you actually look at his technical ability, it's actually incredibly substantial, which makes sense. They just, he's singing and playing all the time. What defines his singing? Well, what I find interesting about Geddy Lee is that, again, what's so wonderful and interesting about Rush is they have 40 years of substantial repertoire. And so it's almost like what defined Geddy Lee in the 70s and what defined his voice in the 80s and the 90s. And you can see it start to evolve and change. Like in the beginning, he had that youthful just energy and stamina. And so he wanted to shriek, and his bass parts were so complicated while he was shrieking up to these incredible notes that I, as a female singer, struggle to sing. And so the fact that he could do that is so wild. And then some of that youthful energy, you can see that it kind of calmed and focused itself as you get more into the 80s and 90s, as he kind of grew up as well. I mean, he has an interesting role in the band where he's not writing the lyrics. He's interpreting someone else's, Neil's, lyrics. And that has to be challenging, because you want to make sure whatever melody you come up with, and I'm sure it was a collaboration melodically to how to interpret the lyrics, but you want to make sure that it's true to what someone else has written. And it speaks to the band's ability to collaborate and to work together, that they were able to create these sometimes really interesting and difficult and unique melodies over his best friend's lyrics. So
what are some of your favorite lyrics to sing?
Oh my gosh, good question. Well, I mean, so I have a few off the top of my head, and for different reasons. I think we can say this probably as a band, but one of our favorite songs to play for the live audience to play together is Red Barchetta. That song has so much energy and so much excitement to it that by the time you get to the ending, but when you're singing, suddenly I had a me, like you feel it every ounce of your body, and it's so invigorating, so much fun. I always, when we do it live, I always lose myself entirely in that lyric.
Yeah.
And it's the narrative of it. It's this really simple story set in the maybe not so distant future. But aside from that one, that one I love for its narrative and for the joy and the exhilaration of it. But honestly, some of their
No, that's good. That's good.
Probably one of my favorite lyrics is that moment in Spirit of Radio when he sings, oh my gosh, I don't even know. All this machinery making modern music and still be open-hearted, not so coldly charted. It's really just a question of honesty. Yeah, your honesty. That to me is one of Neil's most profound lyrics about humanity and music. And I always get chills when I get to sing that, even just in rehearsal. I think it's such a beautiful message and beautifully expressed sentiment. I'm getting emotional just thinking about it, actually.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm.
So that one, and then another one that always struck me, a couple summers ago, the band and I did this very ambitious project where we took Rush's lyrics and tried to build a narrative off of it. We called it The Story of Tom, and it's this fictional character's story, and we used, you know, he's a working man living in the subdivision, and then he moves to the city with camera eye, and he, you know, we just try to use the lyrics of the songs to chart his journey. And most of the lyrics, when I studied them, I could figure out, okay, this is what he's trying to say, this is the message. But one of the most interesting lyrics that I feel like I still don't fully get is Vital Signs. And that's one of his, in some ways, I think, one of the most mysterious lyrics where you kind of know what he means, but there's a lot of implicitness to that lyric. So hopefully that gives you some.
Yeah, no, absolutely. You are imbued in the music, so you speak the truth. I just got chills listening to you describe a few of those lyrics, because that's the thing with Rush. I mean, he touches you intellectually in a way that awakens you with the recognition. It awakens you in that moment with the lyric. The lyric hits you. And this happens so often with so many songs. And then he also awakens you aesthetically with, you know, their breaks. One of the examples for me is always Free Will. That break, and when it falls back into the song, it never fails to make me cry. I just cry from the exercise, from the pure pleasure that I get, that they got away with it. I want to move on from the lyrics, and I want to touch on, being a female fan. For most of Rush's existence, they have been considered a dude's band, a boy fan, like the farm boys. Yeah. And, you know, their fans have been considered to be overwhelmingly male. Tony, you are breaking several stereotypes right here. You are not only a girl who loves Rush, you took your love of Rush to another level by being a singer in a Rush tribute band. What has been the reaction to you being the singer of Modern Day Warriors? What do people tell you when they see, oh, the singer is this this young girl?
All you have to do is go to our channel's YouTube videos and read the comments. And every maybe fourth or fifth comment is, wow, even chicks like Rush. Oh, wow, a girl that likes Rush. So, I mean, what you're describing is what the reaction is. I get a lot of people who are very surprised if they know the band. They're very surprised that there's a girl, I guess a girl in her 20s who's singing Rush music. And I mean, I always find it kind of funny because I try not to think about whether, oh, this is a band. And I'm sure you're the same way, right? That it's not, you're not thinking, oh, like people think, I must think I'm weird because I'm a girl who likes Rush. You focus on the music and the love of it. And you just, you know, put your head down, or I put my head down and I study the music and I play it and I have a great time doing it. And then people will come in and say to you, oh, it's weird that you're doing that. And you go, oh, I guess so, but I'm just doing what I love. I'm just following this music because I love it. And so,
You're breaking that myth. And, I'm a little bit older than you. And, I've been mocked. I've been dismissed, because I'm a Rush fan and, my love for Rush is so pure and, it doesn't matter. I'm just a fan of the music. That is for me the main thing, the most important thing. I'm focusing on the music and it doesn't matter, what you think is for me. It touches me, and that's all it matters.
Exactly.
I also want to talk to you about an interesting idea that I was thinking. When you think about classical music, and even jazz music, the canon is performed. Classical music, some of composers' music has been performed for hundreds of years after their death. Jazz music, you also have the canon, which you play the classics, the repertoire that, will be performed into, hundreds, maybe hopefully years from now. Popular music and rock music is a little bit different because the artist, the musician as a creator is kind of like at the center of the myth of rock. You have, there can only be one Jimi Hendrix, only one Prince. Only one you've heard. But more recently, and what you're doing is, forming a tribute band, sort of like carrying on this tradition of playing a repertoire that's there. Because, the sad thing is that, with the demise of bands, when bands disband or members pass away, the music is silent. They can't tour anymore. And one way of keeping it alive is playing this music and you are with the work that you're doing, you are keeping it alive. Do you think there's more acceptance in terms of respect for tribute bands? Like people are not saying, why are you creating your own music, for example? You think that we can elevate tribute to a level where they can be respected as original bands making their original music?
That is such a great question. I love that you brought it back to the idea of classical music and how, Beethoven died 250 years ago, and yet you can go to see the VSO play Beethoven probably in the next month or two.
Exactly.
I love your question. I think it's so interesting because, in a way, rock music is still very, very recent history. And so I think maybe you are onto something where we could be entering, as a lot of these bands from the 60s, 70s, 80s, as some of these bands, as you say, disband or you know, time and life passes and they're no longer with us, it could be, because right now I think tribute bands, I don't want to say they don't have a great reputation, but a lot of people can be, I think, dismissive of what people do in tribute bands. And it's like, oh, well, you know, it's not as good as listening to the real band, so why would I, blah, blah. But I think there's a role to be taken as a tribute, the role to take on as a tribute band in taking that record, taking that music and trying to add something fresh or new or invigorating to it. And I think we try to do it as much as we can, and we're always thinking of new ideas on how to do that. We have talked about wanting to start implementing visuals at our shows the way that Rush did, and using our own city or our own experience, our own backdrop to influence those. We do small alterations to the songs here or there, like whether it's a different outro or whether it's kind of joining the two songs together. And so I think there's a way to have a tribute band and not just play the song exactly as you hear it on the radio or on YouTube or whatever, but to add a different perspective and a freshness to it. And I think your question was great, and I think you're on to something where it could be that as the rock music history becomes less recent history and we start to have more distance from it, then it may become more accepted for more people to explore this music and play with this music and to try and create new things with this canon, with this music.
Yeah, that is so interesting. Well, you are doing it with your band. And as a fan, I am so thankful. I am so thankful that there are people out there carrying this legacy, showing the music to those who don't know it, introducing the music to younger fans. It was extremely touching to go to your show, see four very talented musicians doing, you know, paying respects to one of the greatest rock bands ever, and also a Canadian band. That means a lot to me as well, because I'm a Canadian. I'm from Venezuela originally, but, you know, Canada and Rush go together for me. So I thank you. Thank you so much. And thank you so much for talking to me today. Before I let you go, where can people find you if they want to listen to the band and attend your shows?
Well, probably the best way is online to start. We have a website, themoderndaywarriors.com. We're also most active probably on Facebook. I think it's facebook.com/themoderndaywarriors. We have a YouTube channel, youtube.com/themoderndaywarriorsofficial. We have Instagram under the same name. We do have quite a few shows coming up the next few weeks, which I don't have off the top of my head, but our earliest one, I believe, is March 14th. We're playing some other bands. I should also say that we are in the works of talking about, as a band, doing a Neil tribute show and making sure that all the proceeds, all the profits go towards glioblastoma, brain cancer research, and treatment. We've lost, you know, I have to mention, you talked about Canada. We've lost two amazing Canadian rock lyricists, Gord Downie, as well, to the same type of brain cancer. So this is really, and myself and other members of the band are also big fans of Tragically Hip and Gord Downie. And so this is hit close to home twice now. And so it's really important for us to do this tribute show for Rush fans, for Neil's legacy, for Neil's memory, and for other people who are going through this terrible brain cancer. So don't have a date for that yet, but stay tuned on our social media channels that I listed, because we will be updating everyone as soon as we have more information.
That is excellent, and I will make sure to mention all of that in the podcast notes. Tony, thank you again. It was a pleasure talking to you. I will be there at all your shows for sure, and I will be there at the Neil's tribute show as well. I think it's a great cause and a great way to keep his memory alive. Thank you so much.
Andrina, thank you so much. This was so fun and so great, and you asked such interesting and challenging and great questions, and I'm so happy to meet another really passionate female Rush band, and even not female, just another Rush band. It's always great to meet like-minded individuals.
Exactly. It was a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Andrina.
And that's our episode. Thank you very much again to Tony During for taking the time to talk to me. And thank you for listening. And as always, keep listening to music and being a fan. Girls Talk About Music is written and produced by me, Andreina Romero. The image design is by Pamela Rowling. The music theme is by The Good Sister. And the drum samples are by Sebastian Lavigne. You can find this podcast on Instagram at Girls Talk About Music.